This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown for April 22, 2010. As we observe Earth Day, we look at a number of struggles in Maine where community members are facing off with large-scale industrial projects to preserve environmental and human health. On September 23, 2009, after participating in a lengthy process of quote-unquote stakeholder input, which still resulted in the Land Use Regulatory Commission's approval of the massive Plum Creek development plan, four people participated in an act of civil disobedience at the meeting where LURC gave its final approval. Two others were additionally arrested. All six have been charged with disorderly conduct and criminal trespass for their civil disobedience. One of the six, who had tried to make his role as a police liaison known to the authorities, a traditional role in civil disobedience, was swiftly arrested in what many consider a brutal manner and was additionally charged with carrying a concealed weapon because of a pocket knife he carried. The cases of all six have been joined, and jury selection is expected the first week of May. Plum Creek is the largest private landowner in the U.S., known for its unsavory timber harvesting practices, and now for development. Plum Creek's plan for Maine, now challenged in court, is to develop 975 house lots and two large resorts in the now heavily forested Moosehead Lake region. Besides the development, Plum Creek has secured extraction privileges on the land that has been placed in conservation easement for water, gravel, and timber. More background can be found in many news sources, including the archives of this program. For the past few months, those who have been involved in resisting the Plum Creek development held meetings and discussions with others in the state working on other prominent environmental and community control issues, such as industrial wind power, corporate water extraction, and the expansion of the waste industry in the state. Discussions, while examining each issue, looked at the common themes of environmental degradation and community disempowerment, while looking at the positive ways community members can affect change and preserve environmental and human health. For Earth Day, we bring you just some of the people in the state working on or supporting this work. We'll follow up on the Plum Creek case in May. Will Neals was one of the six arrested in September. He had been designated police liaison, as he has successfully filled this role before. Neals has worked on a number of environmental issues in the state.
And so that's what these group meetings were about, was bringing together people from all over the state who recognize that we have common, you know, opposition, almost common enemies, really, unfortunately. It's really sad to have to think of it like that, but when people are invading our state and doing things which are clearly counter to the community's needs and interests, then it's hard to look at it in any other way, except as sort of intruders. And so basically recognizing that these people are coming here to Maine to sort of prey on us and our natural resources, and that's not acceptable, that we have to, as a community, stand up for the natural resources we have left in the state, and for the community and the cultural way of life which we have left in the state, and begin to work together to actually move forward as a community to create some correctional change in the way that the government is doing business in the state.
Jessie Dowling was also one of the six arrested at the LURC hearing on Plum Creek. She is a small farmer and cheesemaker.
I think the first reason, or the primary reason for me to have disrupted the LURC decision in September, was because I felt like they had not been listening to the public on the decision for rezoning the Moosehead Lake region. And I felt like because our voices weren't heard, we had to use another form of bringing justice to that situation. And I think it's an example of a bigger problem in the state of corporate interests being listened to much more than what the voices of the people is. We've seen that with how much public comment was against the Plum Creek development plan and how much was for. And when it came out that there was $1.7 million of Plum Creek money going into the fighting to approve the Plum Creek development rezoning. And so you see these cards are stacked so much for the corporations and not much for the people of the state. And I felt like, that's a huge, huge, huge region that's being changed in its development plans for how the future development is going to happen. It's setting precedent for the Northwoods development. And we're at a time when our climate is destabilized, and having intact forests and ecosystems is one of the most important ways that we can combat climate change. and our forests and our water resources and our, you know, the lands that are intact still are going to be some of our best chances in mitigating climate change. And so even though it's private land, it's also a public commons in terms of our atmosphere and in terms of what intact ecosystems can do for carbon sequestration. There's really no comparison. And another thing I wanted to bring up with how, you know, the Moosehead Lake development plan had gone through and other issues in the state like industrial wind power and commercial waste, bringing waste into the state from out of state. I think that Maine is being used as a resource colony, and the exploitation of our national resources and our land, bringing in crap from out of state to be burned here, to be dumped here, affecting people's, you know, health and their backyards and their lives, is just another example of how, you know, in some ways Maine is more like a colonial outpost than seen as a sovereign state. And I think that that's something that people in Maine should really think about as we go forward into the future, that, you know, this state is ours and the resources here are ours, and they're not, I don't think they should be decided, that the future of our resources should be decided upon by big business.
Jim Freeman also participated in the Plum Creek civil disobedience. He is acutely concerned about Plum Creek's plans and the closeness of industry and government interests, particularly through lawyer and lobbyist Severin Beliveau.
Well, I felt a little duped going to some of the wind power hearings with LIRC, and it became evident to me that this, we all kind of fought the commercial developments, the developments around the housing in Lily Bay, 975 house lots, and then 2,000 affordable, $149,000 to $249,000 houses are not quite affordable, but that's what they're calling them in Little Moose Mountain. And it dawned on me, they never had big intentions, because they don't develop, they don't do, they just, you know, get permits and then sell the development rights. But what it's really about is resource extraction. And we kind of handed over on a silver platter 390,000 acres in what they call the legacy easement. And in that easement, they can extract water, gravel, they can have sludge dumps, they can have windmills. Part of the East-West Highway is going to go through there. And any other number of things, plus log it, they're getting paid.
And again, sorry, this legacy easement is the conservation easement. Can you explain that?
Well, what happened, in order to get the development permit, in order to get the whole permit for Plum Creek's development, they had to give something back. And so what they duped us with was this legacy easement, which is permanently set aside 390,000 acres. And people think that's a conservation easement, that's what it's going to be, but it was named a legacy easement. And it changes the zoning. It was mostly in forestry, but it allows them to do things they couldn't do before on that property. And so what they really want, again, I use the term resource extraction, that's what they wanted to do. If they never sell the other stuff, they don't matter. Plus, they sold the legacy easement. They were paid $35 million from the Forest Society of Maine and the Nature Conservancy for that 390,000 acres. That was more than they paid for the entire 975,000 acres that Plum Creek owns.
So seeing, again, the connections between a number of these resource extraction projects or polluting projects, if we're talking about issues of waste and industrial waste throughout the state. Can you talk about this in sort of the wider state picture?
Well, what it is, none of this is value added. You know, we get painted as this or that, but we're not opposed to them cutting trees as long as they get the most value for the trees and do it in a sustainable way. We're not against road building. We're not against this or that. But when it's done in areas it shouldn't be done, we oppose that. But resource extraction is really, it's kind of like the mountaintop mining in West Virginia, where the environment doesn't matter. They're just going to take whatever they can. Nothing ever will grow back there. They're going to pipe water. They're going to have a pipeline going right to Halifax, Nova Scotia, and be shipped on tankers back to Europe. The water's the next oil. So there's no real jobs created on that. That's very third worldish, where somebody comes in, corporations come in, dominate your resources. Very few jobs are attached to it. Nobody in Maine really benefits except for Plum Creek. and the out-of-state corporation that they are.
And one of the other points that were being brought up by those opposing the Plum Creek development and conservation easement plans was this sort of the corruption of process and the lack of genuine public input.
I think that they had lots of public input, but they didn't matter, that it was already done behind the scenes. As soon as they came into the state, it was already granted. There's a fellow named Severin Belliveau who runs Printy, Flaherty, and Belliveau. It's the largest law firm in Maine, but it's also the largest lobbying firm. And so he has undue influence. He helped get Baldacci elected. He can handpick some of the commissioners. In this case, we feel three of the seven LURC commissioners were picked by Belliveau. Well, then he's working for Plum Creek. He puts the commissioners who are going to make the decisions on it. And we got involved in the process as interveners right from the very beginning, knowing full well that this was going to happen. And so part of the arrest was, now, how do you bring that out? How do you get that out to the public? So we're hoping to do that through a trial, make it relevant. Why? When you get arrested for criminal trespass, you have to have privilege to be there. You have to have a reason to be there, and we were. And so now we can use that. The reason we spoke out at that hearing was that we imminently there was a corrupt process going on, and we had to get that out to the public. And hopefully we'll be able to do that through our trial.
Anything else you want to say in closing?
No, but I hope everybody can go to the trial and we can have fun. It's going to be sometime in May. There'll be six of us on trial. It'll be in Bangor in Superior Court with a jury trial. And I'm sure people will be aware when, and it'll be nice to have a lot of people come. And thank you.
Charlie Gibbs is on the planning board in Alton, Maine, which borders the West Old Town Waste Facility. He and his wife, Debbie Gibbs, who's a select person for the town, along with many others, have been active in opposing Maine's attempts to expand out-of-state waste processing and disposal, the lifting of the moratorium on industrial waste disposal, and the work by the Green Energy Alliance, of which Casella Waste Systems is a prominent member, to classify waste energy as green energy, precipitating the need to create more. You can listen to Radioactive's March 11th program on this issue. Charlie and Debbie Gibbs have both participated in the multi-issue meetings precipitated by the Plum Creek arrests.
As we come up on Earth Day, I think people should be aware of the fact that we have a law which Tom Lindsay had brought up. He's a lawyer, environmentalist lawyer, I believe, from Democracy School, and it's called Rights to Nature. Congress has tried our rights to nature, and I don't believe whatever side you're sitting on environmentally, whether it's wind power, whether it's trash incinerators, whether it's dumps, whether it's Plum Creek, I think we all should be aware of the fact that we can put ordinances in our separate towns and say, well, now we're protected against the corporate person coming in and basically raping our town from what we decide we don't want. I am currently chair of the planning board here, and now one of the reasons why went on the planning board initially was to make sure if there were anything done in this town that I'd have a say in the matter. And I have come to realize that in some cases, even if you have an ordinance, they can come in and just do what they want to anyway, whether it's spreading sludge on your land and destroying all of that with all of the different chemicals and that. So When it comes down to generalizing about Earth Day, I think we should all be aware of this. You know, we all are sitting in the driver's seat in our own respective communities, and we have to be more active to make sure that we're on the front line so that these things aren't done before we have to find out that they are being done and have no chance to do anything about it.
Storm Waters was one of the many community members and environmentalists to participate in LURC's lengthy public hearing. He is a meteorologist and worked with the Native Forest Network.
I want to build on a number of things that a number of people before have said, and one of them that I think has probably been reiterated a number of times is that what Frank Zappa would call the crux of the biscuit for a lot of these people is pushing extractive industry, pushing extractive projects in on Maine. I mean, Maine, like a lot of places around the world, is being aggressively corporatized. And one of the things that's not being discussed in the whole climate change issue, there are some of us that have been pursuing the climate change issue for decades, not just years, but for decades. And while that cat has just recently come out of the bag, there's a curious silence on the fact that the role of healthy, functioning native ecosystems is really critical in stabilizing the climate, and that extractive industry is inherently and, you know, and just inextricably antithetical to climate stability, because, again, whether we're talking about mountaintop removal in West Virginia or clear-cutting forests in Maine or extracting water out of the aquifers anywhere, you're talking about direct ecosystem destruction, and this has a very direct and immediate impact on the climate even before any greenhouse gases are put into the atmosphere. This is not only just being neglected, it's being deliberately brushed under the rug, even as potential solutions for the climate change problem and the human community's need for energy are themselves being commodified by these very entities. You know, Plum Creek wants to keep harvesting timber, not only so they can build their resort developments, but so they can fuel what are now biomass-fueled power plants. You know, they want to convert the coal-fired power plants to biomass fuel, and they want to take trees, convert them into pellets, and burn them in these formerly coal-fired power plants. And the infrastructure for that is already coming together in Maine in the form of the, you know, the toxic waste incinerators. You know, they're touting this ridiculous idea of bringing in toxic waste from other states and burning it with the idea that they're going to create juice for communities in Maine. Well, that's absolutely ridiculous, because not only are you putting toxins in the environment, it's a highly inefficient source of energy, and the facilities that are used to burn toxic waste are very, very similar for burning biomass. So ultimately, they're going to start putting trees in those facilities as well. The eastern third of this continent contains over 20% of the world's fresh water reserves, and you have entities like Nestle Waters trying to come in here and drain the aquifers maybe a decade or two before the mass migrations of people who live in the West and the Southwest start moving this way, because the water is drying up and blowing away. So people in the communities around Maine need to get a hold of their resources and take a good long look at their land and stop this. And it's going to happen from the grassroots on up. Those of us that participated in the LURC process over the years for the whole Moosehead Lake thing, you know, we knew ahead of time. We knew that the whole LURC process was going to be rigged. We did not know that that Plum Creek was going to be paying their supporters to come in and testify while we were testifying on our own time and money. But we went into this to show the people of the state of Maine, if they didn't know already, that these state commissions are in the pockets of these corporate entities. And it's time for the people to start organizing in their communities and working from the grassroots upward and saying, no, we're not going to tolerate this anymore. That's in Maine. That's in the U.S. That's all over the world.
Hillary Lister has been active in a number of waste issues in the state where community opposition has played a role in slowing or halting the expansion of waste burning and dumping.
I live in Athens, Maine, and I've been working on issues around waste and Plum Creek and general organizing to help care for our communities around here, because fortunately there seems to be a pretty widespread care among the people who live in rural Maine and the towns around here for the land and for the rivers and for their communities. That hasn't been totally lost here. Actually, it just reminded me, I was reading Bangor Daily a little while ago, and Sam Zaitlin, who's sometimes called the Waste Czar of Maine, had a column about this culture of opposition in Maine that's preventing the culture of opportunity from bringing jobs to our state. And that's also been echoed by John Kerry, who's sort of the energy czar for Maine. He'll often mention at hearings, especially on some of the expedited large-scale wind projects, he brought this up. And at another hearing talking about landfill gas, he brought it up, was the fact, it's this quote from G.K. Chesterton, what's wrong with the world is that there's not enough people looking at what's right with the world. And he was using that quote basically to say that, you know, we can't just keep saying no to all these projects. We have to just start accepting and embracing all of this change. And that seems to be a pretty strong message that a lot of corporations and PR firms and lobbyists are really pushing. If you go to the State House or if you read their columns that are getting featured in the paper, and there's fortunately been a good amount of organizing among people who don't have those connections, who aren't being paid by a corporation to sell basically a development project, people who have full-time lives dealing with other jobs, with families, with who wouldn't necessarily even want to be dealing with these issues, but just from caring about where they are and where they live, have really been able to do extremely effective organizing, effective enough that even with the high-paid attorneys and lobbyists, so many of these companies have not been able to get approvals for these developments they say they need. And I think that was shown with Casella and Waste Management. Both of them wanted to do major expansions at their commercial dumps in this past year. And both of them were talking like these expansions were a done deal. It was already going to happen, but in part due to a lot of community organizing that's built up over the past 10, 20, even 30 years since Maine started to be utilized for the fact that it had so much land to dump all sorts of things in that other places had enough money and power to keep out of their communities, whereas a lot of rural Maine has become the site for a lot of these particularly polluting and dangerous operations. People have also been able to extremely effectively organize and use their friendships and families and intact parts of community to be able to protect themselves.
Another prominent fight in Maine where environmental health and community control has come up against industrial development and state pressures has been the gold rush to site a liquefied natural gas terminal in Maine, specifically on Passamaquoddy Bay. The Three Nation Alliance of Mainers, Canadians, and Passamaquoddy people on both sides of the border fought long and hard against developer Quaddy Bay LLC's attempts to locate a terminal on Passamaquoddy land. Though that has been stopped, Callis LNG is proceeding. Passamaquoddy member Vera Francis sends this update.
Callis LNG claims to have the financial backing of Goldman Sachs, a financial empire now under the microscope of the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. But what we can't seem to find out is who owns Callis LNG. What is known is that Callis LNG is an out-of-state Delaware corporation financed by out-of-state money and has the support of a few local and elected officials who, like their financing entity, refuse to accept the impossibility of constructing a heavy industrial complex in a pristine environment. How many energy companies in Maine presently vying for large tracts of land and access to some of the cleanest water resources in Maine have direct connections with Augusta? Governor Baldacci first imposed this idea on June 22, 2004. That's when his delegation paid an impromptu visit to Pleasant Point to broadcast to the community their support and their pledge to fast-track these energy projects. That one is now defunct, Quaddy Bay LNG. Even that failure hasn't stopped them from continuing to promote LNG in or near the largest Native American population in all of New England. Instead of a policy of environmental racism, let's take heed in the fact that there is plenty of green energy to go around and stop financially burdening the communities to have to defend against situating these projects in illogical locations. There is little to no political leadership here. It all happens behind the scenes, behind closed doors, and by a few individuals who are milking the public for what is known in advance to fail. Sound familiar? The Bay is the heartland of the Passamaquoddy and is no place for LNG. No tide right, no transit.
Robert Shetterly is a Maine artist and peace and justice activist.
I just want to say something about the Plum Creek Six and that might mean in terms of all of our lives. To some degree, anyone who goes out and does civil disobedience or some activist demonstration gets marginalized often by the press and sometimes other forces and groups in society. But it's important to look at and think about what that might really mean. I mean, usually those people are acting from a position of a deep sense of justice and concern, both for the environment and for their communities. And to marginalize them perhaps is similar to marginalizing your conscience or marginalizing your sense of what the truth might be or marginalizing when it is appropriate to have courage or marginalizing your own soul. People with courage who act for the common good are doing the thing that we all know is a thing that must be done, and particularly in this case, where you've got a group of people who speak for many more people, who are acting to protect Maine's environment from development.
Again, Will Niels.
We expect to go for jury selection the first week of May, and most likely proceed with the trial sometime thereafter. We always appreciate the support people give us, and we really appreciate the support that we've received already because of the situation in these cases. You know, that's, in my experience as an activist, it's almost unprecedented around this issue around the state. One of the other things is that we're looking at trying to potentially have some sort of an opportunity for the citizens of this state to show their support for us if they do support us. And that will probably be some sort of an event, potentially a rally up there at the courthouse. And so if people are able to and they hear about it, and I'm sure there'll be information about it on ERU here, we always appreciate the community. If people are able to turn out and support us in Bangor, that would be really, really great. It's one of the things that doesn't happen a lot with political trials in this state. It's really good for the defendants, and it's also really good for the state to understand that there's that level of support for the people who are being charged in these political cases. So, you know, if people can, if you can make the time and you can support us, we really appreciate it.
Ben Pratt works for the Orono Fire Department and volunteers at the Eddington Fire Department. He is also a representative in the Maine Legislature. He serves on the Agricultural Conservation and Forestry Committee.
My name is Benjamin Barrender Pratt. I live in the town of Eddington, and I represent House District 20 in the Maine State Legislature. I think a lot of those connections are, instead of, you know, I don't think of it as being like all of a sudden found. I think a lot of these connections are connections people in the state of Maine have been making for a significantly long time, but we're starting to get a little bit, you know, bigger and better. I think people are starting to pay more attention. I think media has helped out a lot of that. When I was thinking about this, I was thinking about my thesis that I wrote, which is an environmental history of the Kennebec River watershed, and one of the things that I remember most from that was a quote from Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, governor of the state of Maine, Civil War hero, back, you know, it was the early 1870s, I think, something like that, maybe 1880s when he was governor. And he said that he warned of Maine becoming kind of an energy colony to southern New England, and that we had these vast resources and that we needed to make sure that we, you know, managed them correctly, or we would, you know, we would become nothing more than a colony for southern New England. And I think this whole issue reminds me of that, and it's amazing that he had that foresight in the 1870s, and we're still dealing with the same issues. We're dealing with, you know, with water, with wind, with wood, with waste, and all of these things. And this whole idea of, we're talking about the connection with civil disobedience, and how it's the only thing that we have left when you feel it's your last recourse, it seems like. And especially, I know for a lot of the folks that were there, it was the culmination of years of process of trying to work within the system and do the research and testify, and all on their own dime, and you're up against, you know, big money lawyers, and it's just, I was impressed. And since then, you know, we've been having a couple of these, you know, these information sessions that I've seen you at, and some community suppers, and kind of trying to bring this back to the local level and have people make those connections between, you know, a just, sustainable local economy and how the things that we're seeing in the state of Maine, these big industrial wind developments, these huge, large-scale resort developments in Plum Creek, and, you know, kind of bring this back to the people and say, is this really what you want? Is this what you want your communities to look like? When you say conservation easements, people think, that's great, yay. When people have a mind of what they think a conservation easement is, that's not what Plum Creek thinks is a conservation easement, and that's not what is involved in that plan. Industrial sludge spreading rights, mining rights, water mining rights, industrial forestry. It's not what I think people think when they think conservation easement. So there's a lot of education that needs to happen, and that's why these bringing it to the local level and talking with these people and having them go and talk to their neighbors is creating, I think, a really big buzz and an important new group of people involved in this that I haven't seen before, myself included, and that's huge.
You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. You can listen to archives of this and other programs at weru.org.